In 1837, at age 18, Alexandrina Victoria ascended to the most powerful position in the world and remained there for the next 63 years. As the British Empire expanded, Victoria came to rule over one quarter of the world's population. She had an often tempestuous but basically happy marriage and raised 9 children. Journalist and broadcaster Julia Baird has drawn on previously unpublished sources to write Victoria, the Queen, an intimate biography of the woman who ruled an empire. It's published by Random House. I spoke to Julia Baird last month, and we are rebroadcasting the conversation for you now. I began by asking her how Victoria became the queen at the age of 18, although she was fifth in line for the throne.
Right, there's so many what-ifs in the story of Victoria. And really, it was her aunt was the one remaining legitimate grandchild of George III, that the throne was going to pass to. He had 63 illegitimate grandchildren, and that's a whole other story. When she died in childbirth, when she was very young, I'm not sure what it was, some form of preeclampsia possibly, and they put her on a diet and they put leeches on her as they did in Victorian times for everything. She died in childbirth, and suddenly there was no one amongst the grandchildren who was legitimate and who was then in line to the throne, and it prompted this bizarre spectacle of all these middle-aged princes suddenly straightening their shirts and combing their hair and heading off to the royal courts of Europe to find themselves a willing and, in this case, hopefully fertile bride. And in the case of Edward, the Duke of Kent, a strong disciplinarian, a soldier, he found a pretty young widow who he fell in love with and convinced to marry him, and literally she fell pregnant and they raced in the other direction back to Britain so she could have a baby on British soil.
And there was no concern about the fact that Britain was going to have a second queen under very different circumstances. This is way before suffrage in Britain.
Well, that's right. Look, and it did used to be that though you were the monarch of England and also of Hanover, it's strange, it's more part of Germany, which I know seems strange now, but when Victoria became queen, she had to give that up because women couldn't rule there.
Would it be an exaggeration to say that her first reaction when she became queen was pleasure in getting away from her mother?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's something that I was really fascinated to delve into, was her teenage rebellion. She had a real steel streak in her, and much of that was innate, and much of it was also forged during the bullying of her teen years. And her mother, who was a widow, who did not speak the language, she was very much alone in England. Her closest advisor, John Conroy, was obsessed with gaining more power and wanted to be the private secretary of Victoria, wanted to make her mother regency. And when she was only 15, Victoria had to stand up to him.
She was on under 5 feet tall.
Yes,
standing
yeah,
up to people.
Right.
Did people respect her because she was so small?
Well, it's how you carry yourself, I think, in the end. And she certainly carried herself with great authority, even though, yes, she was only a bit over 4'11".
Since her father was dead and she distrusted her mother, whom did this teenage girl rely on for advice?
Well, her uncle Leopold was one who was very keen that she marry Albert from a young age, actually. But the other was this woman called Lehzen, who was a fascinating figure. She was a governess, did not take a day off in her life, was constantly by Victoria's side, and was somewhat of an early blue stocking. She wanted Victoria to be a strong and decisive queen, and that's very much what she imbued her with.
But how strong and decisive did she need to be? This is a constitutional monarchy. In the end, how much power did a queen have? And what happens if she throws herself, it has political views, as Victoria did in the early days, where she sided with the Whigs against the Tories?
Right. It's such a great question, and we could write many PhDs on just exactly that. Look, she had strong political views throughout her entire life.
Later was with the Tories because Disraeli was one of her favourite prime ministers.
Right. She went from Whig to Tory, certainly, over her life. And she also had very strong views on whom she liked and who she didn't and who she thought would be an appropriate prime minister. But I think when you look at the story of Victoria, so her as a person, as well as what happened to the the monarchy over that century. A lot of people assume, oh, it's just inherited power. You just put a crown on your head, you sign various documents, you were just a figurehead. That was really not the case. And I think the first question you asked me, one of the first, was about a woman having power in that time. Now, she was surrounded by people who tried to tell her that she wasn't good enough, that she was female, and either take it away or narrow or restrict her authority in some sense, whether it was John Conroy saying you're trivial and concerned with fashion, or indeed Albert, her husband, who said you haven't really had as good as an education as I have, and I should have I should take over more and more of the governing. And she constantly fought for her prerogative, to be consulted, to be warned. I mean, when Lord Palmerston, the Foreign Secretary, who was quite, say, a liberal interventionist, did not send off memos without her approving them or did not seek her advice, she threatened to get rid of him somehow as a minister. She had much more influence than we think, and she fought for it.
And didn't she have to sign a law to make it law?
She had consent to all of them. That's
so
right.
What happened if she didn't approve of a law that had been passed by Parliament?
Well, she does have to. She was a constitutional queen, so she wouldn't to balk at the last minute would have not been a good thing for the queen. Her influence was very much in the early stages, and actually, she did prevent Robert Peel from becoming prime minister for a short time, and she tried to keep Gladstone out of power as well. I mean, that I think was what stunned me when I looked at how she had intervened in the politics of the day.
Why was it the convention that she had to propose to her cousin Albert rather than the other way around?
Oh, it was by sign of her status. The status of the Queen overrode everything else, and she said it was the most nervous, kind of anxious moment in her life.
Were people concerned that Albert, who was German, might a foreign prince exert too much influence?
Oh, absolutely. And this was a thread throughout his life. They were quite unfair to poor Albert. The fact that he was, you know, firstly, he's considered, you know, somehow emasculated by the status of his wife. And if anyone's watching The Crown, this is something that Prince Philip absolutely has gone through with Queen Elizabeth II. So he was mocked for that. He was known as a pauper prince. And yes, there was a lot of concern about Germany and the Germanic influence, and he was regarded with great suspicion. He overcame a lot of that through his work in the Great Exhibition of 1851, which was, I think, a spectacular achievement of the time.
He was somebody who had was interested in social justice.
Yes, very much so. And I would have been. He died when he was only 42, and I would have liked to have seen what he did over his life. He gave very passionate speeches against slavery. He was very interested in sanitation, the working and the living conditions of the working class. And he really devoted himself to trying to do something about that.
And what was his contribution to the Great Exhibition of 1851?
It was really his championing. He had the idea, someone else had the idea, he worked with someone else to bring it into fruition. So he worked on it day and night. And what he really wanted is to show the spectacle of the century, which was a century of progress and expansion in industry. And he wanted it all to have a moral underpinning, which is we can be better, we can do better. You know, a man is not a beast, but is something more profound. And his own designs were actually shown nearby, which was a demonstration of architecture, a design for a working dwelling.
My guest is Julia Baird, who's written a book called Victoria the Queen, an intimate biography of the woman who ruled an empire. There was at least 7 or 8 assassination attempts on her life. Were they for the same reasons?
That's a really good question. 8 assassination attempts by 7 different men. Mm-hmm. It was never actually entirely ascertained. Some had a mad crush on her. There was one who they believe thought a woman shouldn't be ruling in that kind of position. She got clobbered over the head by someone thought to be a Fenian, so some radical kind of Republican movement at the time. That's really what struck me, and it struck other female writers at the time as well, who in letters to each other were like, what is it about our queen that incites such violence in public?
She also had 9 children, so she was pregnant a lot during this very brief marriage to Albert, who died, what, when she was 40?
They were both 42. 40.
They were both very young.
Yes.
Who did she relegate responsibilities to? Could he take over?
Could Albert take
over,
did you
while
say?
She was
incapacitated. Fact, look, Albert was absolutely bristling to take on more responsibilities. I mean, he said very early on, in the marriage, you know, wrote to a friend, "My frustration is I'm the husband, but I'm not the master of the house." He wanted to be the master. And it was the day she became pregnant. The day she gave birth, that the red boxes, he finally got the key to them, and he began his kind of long march into the very heart of the monarchy and their relationship with the ministers. He was very involved, and it was very smart delegation on her behalf too, by the way.
But then he dies, and they're both 42. So she remains she rules for another 40 years or so.
Yes.
And she had a number. We mentioned Disraeli. Did she like Disraeli particularly because he had all those imperialist policies? Did she like the idea that the British Empire was growing all the time?
She did. She didn't think there should be unnecessary expansion and annexation, and there was certainly a lot of it in that grab for Africa over that time. But she was very imperialist in the sense of, you know, patriotism and investing in the army. And he made her Empress of India, which she was absolutely thrilled about. She adored India. But also he was charming and entertaining, and he sent her flowers and called her his fairy queen and flattered her by, after she had some journals published about Scotland, saying, "We authors."
You wrote an op-ed for the New York Times 2 years ago about Victoria's friendship with her Scottish servant, John Brown.
Yes.
Many people think that he was her lover.
Yes.
What is your thinking here? You looked at all sorts of documents that others haven't seen until now.
I did. That's right. And I couldn't believe it when I stumbled upon them. It's one of the most speculated on and gossiped about relationships in history, certainly in royal history. Much of the evidence of their relationship has been destroyed. Letters have been burnt. Her son was blackmailed with further letters. I think there can be no doubt she loved him deeply. And she loved him in a different... Albert, to her, was godlike and awe-inspiring, this brilliant polymath. No, she went walking on the highlands with John Brown, 6'4", a Scot in his kilt. They drank whiskey on the highlands. He called her woman. He teased her when she put on weight. They had a completely different dynamic. But I think absolutely there was an intimacy there.
And her children resented him, and the press called her Mrs. Brown. In an article in last Sunday's New York Times, you describe your difficulties accessing the royal archives. Why did they deny admission to you and other historians?
They're very, very selective, not always consistent, and certainly not transparent. So I don't know why they've denied other people. I mean, I was saying I had a PhD in history, and I had this contract with Random House, and I was going to be scholarly with the material and cautious. But no, I got rebuffed 3 times. I mean, I just bumped into someone the other day from a women's magazine in Australia who easily got in after they'd run some stories about the royals. So that to me seems quite bizarre. But eventually the Governor General, the Queen's representative in Australia, pled my case for me and got me in. And I have to tell you, it was absolutely thrilling.
But they requested that you censor the
book. Yes. That, so you sign something up in the Round Tower at Windsor Castle, it is, and you sign a contract that says before you go to publication, in fact, before you send your manuscript to the publisher, you will show them the parts where you've relied on the material from the
Royal
Archives.
And what are they afraid of?
Right, but so I showed them the material. In fact, I showed them my whole manuscript, and they were okay with the parts from the Royal Archives. What they asked me to pull was this evidence I had found of a relationship with John Brown, and how she wanted to be buried with his mother's wedding ring on, and so on. What are they afraid of? They still are invested. I didn't take it out, by the way.
I know.
To me,
I was going to ask her about it.
Yeah, okay. They still invested in kind of protecting the Queen from a scandal. It remains scandalous to this day to think that a woman, even a widowed woman, who was also a monarch, could love a servant.
Her 42 grandchildren included Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany, Tsarina Alexandra of Russia, George V of Britain. And didn't Kaiser Wilhelm say that had his grandmother still been alive, she would never have allowed World War I to happen?
Isn't that an incredible thought? I think she was one of the only people he was actually frightened of. And she died. She died in the arm of her doctor was on one side and Kaiser Wilhelm was on the other.
Is she responsible for the hemophilia that ravaged the Russian royalty?
Yes, that's right. It was passed down directly.
She carried the gene?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it was a spontaneous mutation, but it was passed on to her eighth child, Leopold, who died when he was quite young.
In the end, Britain has had any number of women rulers. Only recently, Queen Elizabeth II passed Queen Victoria in length of service.
That's
but
right.
Queen Elizabeth I, of course, is much loved in throughout British history. And the British have had Margaret Thatcher and Theresa May. The United States, on the other hand, has never had a woman as president. The book Victoria the Queen, an intimate biography of the woman who ruled an empire, it is published by Random House. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Such a great pleasure. Thank you.